This podcast is driven by Buick Precision, making every road trip a singular experience.
The American West, an idea as much as a place. We will take you on a road trip through it like no other. Join Discovery Channel and journey deep into America's most famous cave and discover new life forms deep below the deserts of New Mexico and ride through Monument Valley in the footsteps of John Wayne. The American West, as big as your imagination and just as filled with wonders. For centuries, the American West has beckoned the explorer in all of us. A network of highways now connects us to its most remote corners. In this vast land, Discovery Channel has chosen the wonders that best reflect the spirit of the West. It is a countdown of seven natural wonders that will take you to the heart of the Western story. We now count down Discovery Channel's seven natural wonders of the West. And at number seven, the Grand Canyon. Over the years, these chiseled walls have been marveled at by millions of people, including Rough Rider Teddy Roosevelt, who, presumably, had seen it all. Teddy famously said, "The Grand Canyon fills me with awe. It is beyond description, absolutely unparalleled throughout the wide world." Yearly, over 5 million people follow in Roosevelt's footsteps and visit the south rim of the Grand Canyon. But only the select see the astonishing wonders that are hidden inside. There are three ways to get to the bottom of Grand Canyon. You can walk for 8 hours, ride a mule for 4, or you can fly. We are hitching a ride with helicopter pilot Jeff Boatman, who knows the canyon like few others. Jeff came here 20 years ago and has never left. He makes a daily run carrying supplies to the only human inhabitants living at the bottom of the canyon, the Havasupai Indian Nation. Adventure guides like Brian Jump and Seth Heald. Their job is to show the adventurous the secrets hidden at the bottom of the canyon. Today, they are taking Julie Munger, one of the world's most accomplished riverboarders, to explore the seldom-visited Havasu Creek that snakes through the rock. On their trek down to what is known as the Natural Shower, the group stops for a swim in the glycerin waters of Mooney Falls. Yeah. At 200 feet, this magnificent waterfall is a full 25 feet higher than Niagara Falls. Julie's love affair with the canyon began when she was a teenager.
I came to the canyon the first time in 1976 with my dad, and that's where my love was instilled in the canyon from the time I was 15. And as soon as I could, I started river guiding down here.
But Julie has seen more of this canyon than the average visitor. She's ridden down all 300 miles of the Grand Canyon, a part of the first group to do so on a riverboard.
I thrive on adventure and I thrive on the unknown. We were prepared. You know, we were prepared for cold water, we were prepared for cold weather.
After waiting 6 long years for a permit, Julie and 2 close friends made the 19-day journey on a board that is 2 feet wide and 4 feet long. It's a Coast Guard-approved foam board, used primarily for extracting people from the water via helicopter.
The fortunate thing about a riverboard and having so much foam, you don't feel it going over the rocks. You're immersed in the water and looking all around, and it's so quiet and calm, and the water's so clear that you just feel like you're flying and everything slows down. Grand Canyon is immense. For 19 days, we were the only 3 people in this huge place, huge water. And it makes you feel incredibly small, and there's an incredible sense of awe and inspiration and glee and just peace in being that small in such a big, wild place.
Discovery Channel's seventh natural wonder of the West is one of the most amazing sights in the world. A gift from the past. To remind a nation focused on the future, what a little water and a lot of time can create. Our road trip now moves to the mountains and deserts of New Mexico. And natural wonder number 6, formed almost 30 million years ago, the Guadalupe Mountain Range hides Discovery Channel's 6th wonder of the West, a place not on this earth, but underneath it, the Carlsbad Caverns. Since its discovery in 1898, 38 million people have come to see Carlsbad's 31 miles of tunnels, some of them over 1,000 feet beneath the surface. Ranger Greg Litton spends his days showing visitors the seemingly infinite marvels of Carlsbad.
Without a doubt, Carlsbad Caverns is one of the most beautiful and accessible places in the world to see what water can do over time.
These caves have been formed over millions of years. Each stalactite and stalagmite is formed drop by drop, a process that began 500,000 years ago.
There's no other cave in the world that we can get to so easily and see such a beautiful tapestry of stalactites and stalagmites. There's a corner of this cave you could put an aircraft carrier more than 1,000 feet long, and the aircraft carrier would fit into a part of this cave. But in this mountain range, in this national park, there are more than 105 caves. Carlsbad Caverns is not the deepest, it's not the longest, it's not really the biggest.
Prehistoric Indians were the first to enter these caves. Perhaps they were drawn by the bats that use its hard-to-find entranceway as their home. But it would be a cowboy named Jim White who first delved into Carlsbad's pitch-black caverns, using oil lamps, ropes, and a bucket to lower himself. Jim White opened up the caves to the world. Now, a fortunate few visitors can get a sense of Jim's adventures in Spider Cave, a vast cave system, a 1.5 mile hike from the main Carlsbad Caverns. Visitors have to crawl through holes roughly the size of a toilet bowl to enter, and it takes even more underground trekking to reach the cave's main room. The very deepest tunnels of the caves are only open to scientists, like Diana Northup.
We protect these caves because there are microbes present that are new to science. We don't know anything about some of them. They tell us a lot more about the biodiversity of the world, and they're only so far been found in this cave.
A short distance from Carlsbad, a remarkable find will allow scientists to protect a cave from its moment of discovery onwards. The caverns of Lechuguilla are considered one of the greatest caving discoveries of the last 100 years. So far, only 500 people have been allowed to enter. After a 90-foot rappel, the scientists must enter a chamber that maintains the temperature and humidity of the cave. Even though the caves are made of rocks, they contain some of the most fragile ecosystems in the world.
Lechuguilla Cave has probably some of the very first sightings of some very unique kinds of cave formations. Some of these have never been seen before in the world.
Water, rock, and time. Mix them together in darkness under the earth, and you've got a recipe for a wonder. America's West is full of wonders. And for anyone who's ever seen a Western movie, Monument Valley is the West.
The amazing thing about Monument Valley is no place looks like Monument Valley. It's instantly recognizable, and yet it's the place that stands for the West as a whole, even though there's no place like it any other place in the West.
Where gigantic buttes and spires tower over the desolate red landscape, Americans somehow feel at home. Sculpted by water and wind millions of years ago, sandstone monoliths have become part of the topography of the American psyche. Monument Valley's rise to prominence began in the mid-1930s when a noted landscape photographer named Joseph Munch came here and began taking pictures. Eventually, those photographs landed in the hands of a young Hollywood director who decided that Monument Valley would make the perfect backdrop for a movie he was about to make. The director was John Ford, and the movie he wanted to make was called Stagecoach. Stagecoach went on to become one of the most famous westerns ever made, and Ford believed this success was due, in part, to the unique landscape. During its heyday, Hollywood fell in love with Monument Valley.
And the quality of Monument Valley that really sets it apart are those spires, those buttes. It looks like you're on the moon.
Today, they're not making westerns like they used to. But some of the native Navajo people who live here remember when the valley was inundated with film crews. George Sisko is one of them.
I remember when I was herding sheep, and I'm coming in around about 1948. They just came down here for the scenery, I guess the monuments. It was pretty exciting.
most of the cameras have come and gone, and Monument Valley has reverted to its pre-Hollywood role, sacred ground, rather than a movie set.
My grandpa was a medicine man, and he really respected these monuments here. There's prayers to it. There's songs to it. It's real sacred to them.
Jameson Black and his wife make their living giving horseback tours. Jameson always provides a little history lesson with his tours to make sure that the tourists know what the land meant to the native people before actors arrived.
It's really sacred land to the people. They live off of the land. The rogue formations here are mostly assembled to the talking gods, but according to the history, you know, through Navajo mythology.
Monument Valley has inspired those who live here for years. Now it has become the defining symbol of the West, just like in the movies. Take the road a few hundred miles west towards the setting sun, and eventually you'll come to Discovery Channel's fourth natural wonder of the West. Welcome to Death Valley, and some of the most extreme terrain found anywhere. Simply stated, it is a desert. Death Valley boasts the hottest temperature ever recorded in the United States, a blistering, all but unbelievable, 134 degrees. You'll also encounter the absolute lowest point in the Western Hemisphere, 282 feet below sea level. Two mountain ranges, towering to heights of over 11,000 feet, surround Death Valley, creating a rain shadow effect and turning the valley into a desiccated cauldron, forever deprived of the one essential element needed for life, water. At 3 million acres, it is the biggest national park in the continental United States. Yet despite its enormous size, Death Valley has less than 500 full-time residents. Way back when, miners and pioneers tried to make their fortune from gold and minerals in Death Valley. Few succeeded. Just beyond the edge of Death Valley lie the remnants of one such venture, started in 1904, deserted by 1916.
The ghost town of Rhyolite, Nevada, was a pretty populated town. I had about 10,000 people here. They had 53 saloons, over 200 cribs in the red light district, and two churches. Now, why they built so many churches, we never did figure out.
It didn't take too long for the folks of Rhyolite to wise up and move on to greener pastures. But the ghosts and follies of the past are part of Death Valley's unique charm for the heat tolerant of today. Emily and John Turner have been disappearing into Death Valley on a regular basis for years. John is a Gulf War veteran who's familiar with extreme environments and loves them, a passion he shares with his wife.
You have 11,000-foot mountain peaks. You have the floor of the valley is below sea level. There's a richness that the name doesn't lend you to think of.
But living just barely beneath the crust of its vacant beauty lie the realities which gave the valley its name. Originally thought to be a shortcut to the gold mines of California, the valley turned out to be a death trap. A group of settlers, looking for a shortcut over the High Sierra Mountains, found themselves in this trap. Like most shortcuts, it was anything but short.
Death Valley got its name from the pioneers that were stuck here for 28 days, hoping that those that they had sent for help to rescue them would someday return. When they finally made their route out of here, they took one look back into this great abyss out here and uttered the words, "Goodbye, Death Valley."
Unchanged for thousands of years, Death Valley is like a theme park, only real. Over the years, people have tried to settle here, but not surprisingly, the Native Americans succeeded best.
The Native peoples who lived out here, they were living, they weren't surviving. And when the pioneers came out here, and the cowboys and the ranchers, they learned to adapt to this land, and they learned by being out in it.
So what should the average person visiting Death Valley know before getting there? Discovery has a few helpful survival tips. A little common sense and a few household items can prepare you for the unexpected. Because in a place as harsh as Death Valley, the unexpected can be very serious.
Most people have 100% cotton balls and some film canisters laying around. You just roll these in some petroleum, jelly, some Vaseline. You've got an instant wet weather fire starter. Next step is to pull out your fire starting device. I don't leave home without magnesium fire starters here. You can't really break down on you like a lighter can, which you just strike a spark on this, and then you scrape off some sparks. Another tool to carry with you. No desert traveler, especially in Death Valley here, should be without an umbrella in their vehicle. It creates instant shade. Think about what you have on you or in your vehicle or in your pack and use those for signaling. You're looking at three flashes, repetitions of three. Three is a universal distress signal. You can use CD-ROMs that you get in the mail, or maybe you have some in your vehicle, and they can even work on semi-cloudy days. Now, is that all you need to survive indefinitely? Probably not, but you need some basic gear to get you through.
Dangerous as it is, if you respect the elements, Death Valley is a wonderful way to see a natural wonder of the West at its most extreme. High in the Rocky Mountains of the American West lies a protected wonderland. Yellowstone National Park is Discovery Channel's natural wonder number 3. Established in 1872, it is the oldest national park in the world, and with its abundant wildlife and rugged wilderness, probably its most famous. Every year, 3 million tourists come to the park, and everyone wants to see the main attraction, the world's most famous geyser, Old Faithful. Every 76 minutes or so, Old Faithful erupts, launching boiling water 100 feet into the air. Old Faithful has become an icon of the American West. But what most of us do not realize is that Old Faithful is just one small part of one of the world's most active volcanoes. Geologist Hank Hessler has been trying to unravel the geothermal mysteries of Yellowstone for years.
There are over 900 geysers in Yellowstone, the largest concentration of geysers in the world. We have over 10,000 thermal features here, and all these things are constantly evolving as a result of this being one of the world's largest active volcanoes.
By regularly taking the geyser's vital signs, scientists hope to gain an insight into the explosive patterns of geyser behavior. In Yellowstone, there's always another hot spot to monitor somewhere nearby.
It's Steamboat Geyser, which is the tallest geyser in the world, and there is a bit of activity here. It has a very irregular eruption interval, so it's not like Old Faithful where it's easily predictable. Sometimes this geyser will go 50 years without erupting.
Hank enjoys sharing the park with all the other creatures who are drawn to these thermal features. In Yellowstone, people and wildlife share the same land in a way that's unique. Everyone just intermingles. Yellowstone is a park bubbling over with explosive energy. This is what makes it our third natural wonder on our road trip of the West. The American West is home to a place that's been called the most beautiful valley in the world. Discovery Channel's second wonder of the West, Yosemite National Park. Yosemite is a park the size of Rhode Island that gets over 3 million visitors a year, making it one of the most popular parks in the American West. It features a glacier-carved valley that has been immortalized by its most famous resident, photographer Ansel Adams. Adams first visited the park as a teenager and was captivated by the rugged landscape and its ever-changing weather. He came back to Yosemite as an adult. The park was home to his children, including his son, Michael.
As a child, growing up in Yosemite, I was born here in 1933, this was quite a place.
By capturing the splendor of the park under the constantly shifting conditions of sun, mist, and cloud, Adams gave the world a compelling picture of the West. He photographed nature, wild and unspoiled.
The West you see in an Ansel Adams photograph is carefully framed so that all of the human factors are taken away. Ansel Adams will give you a nature where you can imagine that there's nothing human there. Of course, that's not true. Ansel Adams is controlling what you see, but what you see is so spectacular, so beautifully done, that you want to believe that the West really is something purely natural, and no matter what has happened, that essential natural part remains.
Adams had plenty of subjects to choose from. Giant sequoias, 250 feet tall, the looming wall of Half Dome, hundreds of spectacular waterfalls. Few people knew Adams' passion for photographing Yosemite better than his son, Michael.
As I grew up, I accompanied him on a number of trips around the valley, And when I was big enough, I could carry his cameras.
Alan Ross also assisted Adams for years. Now he's an accomplished photographer in his own right. He started working for Ansel Adams at the age of 25. Adams taught his protege that Yosemite is all about capturing the majesty of its atmosphere.
The weather is the glue that kind of adheres the heaven and earth in a photograph.
Adams made Yosemite into an art, but today, a new breed of explorer has made the park their own. 23-year-old Beth Rodden is one of only two females in the world to free climb El Capitan.
The rock here in Yosemite is truly a natural wonder because it is perfect white granite, and you can hardly find that anywhere else in the world to this extent.
El Capitan is the largest chunk of exposed granite on Earth. And although you can hike to the top in 4 hours, the most dramatic way to get to the top is hand over hand.
Free climbing means when you're climbing the rock and you're using ropes and protection, but you're using the features of the rock to get yourself up it.
You definitely get completely exhausted because you're working hard all the time, but the emotional beauty is awesome up here.
From the flower-studded meadows to the grandeur of these snow-capped granite walls, people still find as much cause for wonder in Yosemite as Ansel Adams did so many years before. Discovery Channel's Natural Wonder of the West, number one, is its largest and most powerful, the San Andreas Fault. It creates mountains, hills, valleys, and canyons. The California landscape that lures so many people westward. The San Andreas Fault came into existence 5 million years ago and is still alive and actively shaping the landscape of the American West. The fault runs nearly 700 miles down the spine of California.
The San Andreas Fault is really, it's a system. All of this strain that's building mountains and building topography in the western United States gets shrunken down to a crack in the earth.
The San Andreas Fault comes in from the Pacific Ocean at Point Reyes, north of San Francisco. It then crosses the water just west of the Golden Gate Bridge and heads back inland, before traveling on down towards Los Angeles and the Mexican border. The route encompasses cities and bridges.
The San Andreas does two things. One, it creates a beautiful city of hills, great topography, views. It also, every 50 to 100 years, creates major earthquakes that destroy sections of the city.
Every year, California experiences 38,000 earthquakes. That's about 100 a day. Most are too small to be felt. But scientists are taking lessons from the past to prevent tragedies from happening in the future.
The 1906 earthquake was a magnitude 7.8, and it was the largest earthquake to occur in the United States in the 20th century.
In 1906, the earth trembled for a minute and a half, and much of San Francisco was destroyed.
The effects of 1906 are still being felt now in the way we think about earthquakes and the way we analyze the possibility of future earthquakes. It was really a tremendous event. We've estimated that in the next 30 years, there's a 62% probability, or a 2 in 3 chance, essentially, that we will have a large, close-in urban earthquake. And this is what the region is trying to prepare for.
Tom Burdett is California's first line of defense against earthquakes.
Our network, which is started here, this is in about 1967, an instrument was placed here by the USGS. It's one of the first ones that we put here in California. When we came here 30 years ago, we knew it created large earthquakes. We really didn't understand the earthquake process. These black boxes are there so that we can do studies on shaking and know how structures and the ground is going to respond.
The data recorded is then transported back to U.S. Geological Headquarters to be analyzed and processed.
The program that we have today is an outgrowth of the things that happened in 1989. If we had had this system in 1989, we could have responded more quickly to damage in the Marina District in San Francisco. We couldn't have stopped any of those things, but we certainly could have responded better if we had had this system in place.
Pat Buskovich is a structural engineer. His specialty is retrofitting old buildings.
You have to think of buildings like house of cards. They're basically stacked like a house of cards. When an earthquake comes, the ground shakes and the cards fall down. And so the intent is to prevent that from happening. When we retrofit buildings, we retrofit them to survive an earthquake with damage. That's a concept everyone needs to understand. There is no such thing of an earthquake-proof building. We design buildings to be earthquake-resistant.
Just as it has done for millions of years, the San Andreas Fault continues to shape the dramatic topography of the American West. And despite the danger it poses, millions continue to be drawn to the astonishing landscape it still creates.
You've been listening to a Discovery Channel feature presentation.